Route 24 from the site, and it's also partially in the Indian River Fire Company service area. The site is in the Cape Henlopen School District. I know you're all familiar with the area. There's extensive retail and service businesses located nearby on the Long Neck Road area. And as far as the development, management of the development, as I said, all owners, both on the west and the east side, would be members of one Burton Pond Community Homeowners Association. That association would be responsible for the enforcement of the restrictions, for collecting community fees, and for managing, operating, and maintaining all of the common areas and the rec facilities. And that would include, again, Mr. Lynn will be explaining this in more detail, but that will include the environmental service management plan that we've developed for Burton Pond itself. Now, as far as the nature of the area, our parcels are what I think could truly be referred to as an infill parcel. That is undeveloped land that is surrounded by an extensively developed residential area. And I'd like to refer to an exhibit. Just for reference purposes, this is Route 24 right here. This would be running toward Rehoboth. This would be running toward Millsboro. Our sites are located, again, on the west and the east side of Route 24. These are our sites right here.
You got somebody do the same thing on that map because I don't know where you're pointing.
Okay, the green or the dark green are the Burton Pond parcels, the east parcel and the west parcel. On the east side of Route 24, adjacent to the site before you tonight, where there are several residential areas. It's not marked here, but this closest red area right here is Brandywood, Herring Creek Estates, Pinewood Farms. If you go north of that, the Angola by the Bay development is located right here. On the west side of 24, again, adjacent to our site right here are two smaller subdivisions in Overville and Holly Patch. Burton Pond itself is located right here. On the other side of Burton Pond is Lockwood.
Excuse me, Mr. Fuqua. Can you all hear Mr. Fuqua in the back? Okay.
Okay.
We got a microphone. I was going to amplify him up a little bit, but if he's speaking.
I'm trying to speak up. Just
okay,
for a
that's fine.
There's another remote mic on their house, near our house sitting.
All right. We just want to make sure they could hear you in the back. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Lockwood is located just on the other side of Burton Pond. West of the site here, there's several other developments, Greenback Estates. River Oaks. Adjacent to the western portion is also Holly Lake Campground, which is a campground with approximately 1,000 campsites. Going south on Route 24, down further here, you come to the Pines at Long Neck, and then of course the larger development is the is Baywoods. Baywoods is located. Approximately 1 mile from our site, actually a little bit less than a mile.
Could you point out anything on there that's similar to the development you're proposing? Sure. Any kind of big house or any multifamily that's...
Yeah, Baywoods is approved for over 300 multifamily units.
That's outside of that radius. What is that radius? Is it a mile or two so down the road?
It's within that radius.
7 years for Brendan.
In fact,
that's the only one. And they haven't built anything yet, right? They haven't built.
Well, Baywoods has extensive multifamily.
We got them out there already.
But if you build,
yeah. In fact, in the county council, in approving the multifamily units at Baywoods, and Baywoods was approved for 1,056 units, that approval permitted up to 30% of the units to be multifamily units. And as I said, a good number of those units have already been constructed and are being occupied. The actual ordinance when the county approved Baywoods in finding in its decision for the multifamily units, the council noted that the land was in a development district similar to this site, that the Office of State Planning had no objection to the application, and the county required that all of the multifamily units be located on the east side of Route 24 at Baywoods. And in designing our site, that was part of the guidelines that we used in locating all of the multifamily on the east side of Route 24, similar to the Baywoods requirement. At the planning and zoning hearing, which we had a couple of weeks ago, and I don't want to speak for some of the folks who are here. They may disagree with me, but it was my perception that there was very little concern expressed by the area residents regarding the single-family subdivision portion of the Burton Pond communities. The concern that seemed to be expressed in the letters that I read and in the testimony that was presented seemed to be directed to the MRRPC application on the eastern side, what's before you tonight. And we've certainly given it some thought, and in light of the opposition that was expressed, it's certainly fair to wonder, number one, why we are requesting an MRRPC. What does the MRRPC request accomplish? And why don't we drop the MRRPC and refile for a cluster single-family subdivision? All right, again, this is in the environmentally sensitive development area. We would have the right to reduce our lot sizes to 7,500 square feet because we are providing central sewer. And they certainly are legitimate and obvious questions. And ultimately, they're the questions that you're going to have to answer in making this decision. But they're the same questions that we had to answer in considering what we were applying for and why we are sticking with our original application. We made the decision that we believe, and our position is, that dropping this MRRPC request and replacing it with a single-family subdivision would be a bad land use planning decision, and it would be contrary to everything that the state and the county planning recommendations and goals have been over the past decade. We feel very strongly that the site conditions, the applicable land use laws and regulations, and the stated goals and objectives of the county and state relative to land use policies are fully met and they're best served by the MRRPC application that's before you tonight. Now, why do we feel that way? A lot of thought went into this application, both the western and the eastern portions of it. Our plans incorporated a lot of land planning approaches that were recommended by the county, and I'll specifically refer to something that nobody ever refers to, and that is designing open space developments in Sussex County, which was prepared for the Sussex Conservation District by Randall Arndt. According to this, it was distributed in November of 1999, and it's a guideline for open space developments. Also, more recently, you're familiar with the Better Models for Development in Delaware, which again was prepared in connection with the Conservation Fund, the Livable Delaware Advisory Council, and basically I believe Ed McMahon was the author of that document. There's similarities in those plans, but basically they set forth design criteria, considerations, and basically the way things should be planned. And in addition, the general principles of the state of Delaware's Livable Delaware Agenda, and there's five principles of that Livable Delaware Agenda. One is to guide growth to areas that are most prepared to accept it in terms of infrastructure and thoughtful planning. And again, we're going to be financing the infrastructure for this site. Another principle is to preserve farmland and open space. We've gone to extensive measures to preserve open space. Third principle is to promote infill and redevelopment. As I've already shown you, this is basically in an infill area where existing residential developments exist. The fourth principle was to facilitate attractive, affordable housing, which, as we'll be explaining, is one of our reasons for this proposal. And the fifth is to protect our quality of life while slowing sprawl. And again, this is in a growth area as designated by the Sussex County Land Use Plan.
You're calling this affordable housing now?
Yeah.
Is this part of the project
We'll be explaining that. I'll explain that in more detail, okay? A portion of this portion as compared to the single family will be, plus we do, I hate to bring this back up, but we do propose having 20 MPHU units.
Additional?
No, it's part of our number. It's not bonus density.
And the breakdown out front, yeah.
But I'll explain that in some more detail. In addition to that, we considered the goals and the guidelines that are set forth in the county land use plan. And as I stated, the parcel before you is in the environmentally sensitive development area. The environmentally sensitive development area is a growth area under the county plan, and the plan states that the purpose of the growth areas are to accommodate the increased demand for housing units from inward migration and the need for low and moderate income housing. And that's on page 11 of the plan. In addition, the environmentally sensitive development section of the plan itself states some, again, guidelines that we utilize. One is, it states that the environmentally sensitive development area can be defined as a developing district with special environmental design and protection requirements. And again, the environmental protection and considerations were something that were one of the main goals and main factors that went into the design of both sides of this proposal. In the environmental sensitive development area section under guidelines for infrastructure, the land use plan states that extension of central wastewater systems in this area to serve failing on-site systems and new development will protect the inland bays from excessive amounts of nutrients. Again, we are proposing a central sewer system from Tidewater. The environmental sensitive development area section also states that there are several privately owned companies providing water service in the area, and expansion of these services are desirable. Again, we're using Tidewater to expand the water to this site. Under the environmentally sensitive development area guidelines for housing types. So again, these are the guidelines for housing types in the environmentally sensitive district. Housing types approved in the environmentally sensitive district include single family detached homes, townhouses, and condominiums. It goes on to state that residential planned communities and village style development should be encouraged in this area to provide open space and to protect habitat. And again, what we are doing is providing open space and protecting habitat. Under guidelines for density, it says the county should enact an ordinance requiring any applicant of a major development as defined in the ordinance to provide information and analysis addressing the development's environmental impact. And again, in our exhibit book, we did submit the environmental statement that is required under the environmental overlay ordinance. And you can review that. I won't recite that into the record. Now, in addition, in preparing this plan, the starting point, or one of the starting points, is participating in the PLUS process. And we did present our proposal to the State Planning Office and the state agency some time ago. We considered the recommendations that the State Planning Office made and the agencies made. We implemented many of their suggestions into our plan. And we do have correspondence from the state regarding their opinion of our plan. And I'd like to refer first to the original PLUS letter of September 15, 2005. This is from Connie Holland, who's the director of the State Planning Coordination Office. And in reference to the MRRPC request, the state says, "We have no objection to the portion of the project located east of Route 24 within the environmentally sensitive developing area." In addition, after we submit our comments back to the State Planning Office, they comment on our comments. So there was a follow-up letter that was issued on December 7, 2005. And again, in that follow-up letter, the state again states that they do not oppose the proposal. They go on to cite in that letter several other comments, one of which is that the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs commended the developer for avoiding and protecting the areas identified by HCI, that's Height Consulting, our archaeological people. Again, they commended the developer for avoiding and protecting the areas identified by HCI as possible archaeological sites. Also, the letter mentions that the Department of Agriculture stated that they appreciate the developer's efforts to positively respond to concerns forwarded by state agencies and are particularly glad to see a reduction in the acres of forest land impacted by the development proposal, as well as the proposed forestation proposals. The Department of Agriculture thanked Macrone for their good faith effort to address theirs and other state agencies' concerns. They noted that they have no objection to the project currently proposed. There was a subsequent letter received from DENREC's Division of Parks and Recreation. And again, they state that they comment on the Burton's Pond community's development. They mention the forested riparian lands located on the southern portion of the site, and they appreciate the applicant's efforts to remain out of these environmentally important areas. And lastly, another letter from DENREC. This is from the Environmental Laboratory section, and this is in reference to the Burton Pond environmental management plan that we were proposing. And what DENREC states is, I have read the report, Burton Pond Community LLC Environmental Assessment Studies. The proposed actions are quite broad in scope and are a welcome holistic approach to managing the pond and its periphery. Clearly, the intent is to achieve both ecological and aesthetic quality. I have no objection to any of the proposed actions. And it goes on to conclude, I wish you success in achieving the improvements that you propose for Burton Pond. To my knowledge, past or present, there is no pond of comparable size in Delaware that has been subjected to such a comprehensive management effort. We're all aware the level of effort you propose is usually applied to much smaller water bodies, such as stormwater management ponds. There are numerous other mill ponds in Delaware that could benefit from some or all of the actions that you propose. Thus, the Burton Pond Project could be viewed as something of a pilot study.
Who's that from?
It's from DENREC, Robin Tyler.
Okay.
He's Environmental Laboratory Section.
Okay.
So again, what we did was we read the guidelines that have been proposed for good development. We read the zoning ordinance and the land use plan on what the county indicated was appropriate, and we designed it, listened to the comments from the state agencies, from state planning, and not only listened to them, but actually received praise from them on some of the aspects of this development. Now, with that background, what I'd like to do is turn our presentation over to Mike Lynn, and Mr. Lynn's going to explain the process of how our proposal was designed and what we believe are the benefits that will be realized from that design.
Good evening. My name is Michael Lynn. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm president of RDM, and we're a builder-developer located in Ocean View. I'm here representing the Burton Pond Communities, LLC, and our partners in this venture are Ocean Atlantic and David G. Horsey and Son. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present this project for your review and consideration, as Jim has detailed the specifics of the request, as well as touching on the technical aspects that went into the work. What I'd like to do, as Jim said, is share the thoughts of the developer and basically tell you how we arrived at where we are and the approaches we took. And as you've heard, we're reviewing the request for the MRRPC of 102 multifamily units planned on the 42 acres, which in turn is part of this entire track called Burton's Pond Communities. What I'd like to do is go to the aerial, the flipboard, and what I've tried to do is quickly bring you along over the year and a half that we did and the studies that led us to the development envelopes that we've utilized. Just as a way to orient the property, this is the... I've been playing with this all evening and I'm running out of here. This is the tract of land. This entire Burton Pond includes the pond, this track, this area down to here, and that's the AR cluster request. And this area in black is the request for the MRRPC, 42 acres. We do have a option contract on this parcel of land, which will be important later on to tell you how we're going to handle that. On the western section of the property, we have Route 24. That's our western boundary. On the southern boundary, we have a standing wood line of over 12 acres, and that's the buffer between Brandywood and Herring Creek Estates. Again, and its northern border is a substantial upland, a wetland forested, and wetland period area, and that's our northernmost border and boundary. Our initial research and understanding of the property began with a series of field investigations and studied by a series of engineers and scientific disciplines. And cumulatively, when we put this work together with some fundamental development goals that we wanted to achieve, our basic land plan and approach was developed for the property. We believe that good community planning begins with an understanding of the property's characteristics, its constraints, its features, and most importantly, its opportunities. In the case of this property, the opportunities were the strongest assets, and they were the environmental fact anchors, the pond and the wood line along in here. Our approach to begin our planning was to identify, map, and work to avoid the constraints, identify, map, and work to either preserve or enhance special site features, and finally, identify, map, and work to protect and manage the site assets. Given the site's characteristics, again, the pond, the upland wooded area, the wetland wooded area, the environmental and what we found, archaeological features, what we would end up avoiding and what we would protect, what would be preserved, and finally areas that we would enhance would eventually determine those areas that we would try to develop. I'm going to ask the first overlay done. We began our site investigation by identifying the extent of wetlands on the property, and we used JCM Environmental Consultants to identify the extent of the non-tidal wetlands. And once JCM flagged them, we then asked our surveyor to place these on the what we call the development base sheet, and that is the area as it's mapped. This became our first article here. We had no wetlands on this application as such. But one of our goals, the initial design, was not only to identify the extent of the wetlands, to avoid any intrusion into these areas, but also begin to establish significant setbacks between the wetlands and the development. As I said, in the case of this application, there were no wetlands identified on the property. There were, however, extensive wetlands on the western side. The next, we then located our upland wood line. Utilizing our surveyor, this field information was transferred and added to the development base sheet. This was entire wooded area, but this green represents upland woods. Mm-hmm. And this area, this property, the 42 acres, over 12 acres is significant old growth along with this line here. This area is shadowed because of the aerial was taken at a certain time of the day. Our initial intention was to minimize the clearing and introduction of development into the existing upland woods on the site. And the parcel under consideration, again, has over 12 acres of that upland forested area. The next, and don't flip it yet, please. From our initial research, we learned that this area in general and specific areas on the property contain archaeological sites of interest. And to make the determination of the archaeological impacts and whether these sites of interest were significant or not, we engaged Height Consulting to do a preliminary investigation of the entire track. From this preliminary investigation, Height determined that there were 12 areas of interest within the Burton property. This purple area is in here, along in this. This runs off our property line in this area here. There, and there. The field work enabled them to not only determine site significance, but through a phase one study, establish the boundaries by actually digging and working on these sites of significance. So then they could flag it and we could put them on the base sheet. On this parcel, Height located the existing cemetery, an 18th century old building. You wouldn't know it unless you went out there and saw as they did. And this archaeological area of significance, which is prehistoric. And there's also a old dump site here that is actual gold to archaeologists because they're unable to dig and tell the past. These other sites here were of less significance and represented where the old Angola stores were located. Based on Height's information, we established the goal of avoidance whenever possible, preservation when necessary, and to minimum create the least impact of the development on this area. What I want to do here is just flipping back, and I'll walk over. What we wanted to avoid is what occurs on the property on our western boundary. This is a standard of cross-table subdivision on septic lots, three-quarter acre lots. Now that purple line connects all the way across there, along with the trees. There's their stormwater facility. That area is prehistoric in nature. We did not want to take that approach, and we worked to avoid intrusion into any that area with minimal impact. And the next, overlay shows that during our due diligence, we contacted DelDOT to review the proposed community's impact on the existing road systems. Early in the discussion, both parties, while determining the location, establishing a location for the traffic counts, both parties recognized that a complete fix of Route 24 couldn't be generated as a result of the traffic from this proposed development. However, because of the recognized safety issues related to the immediate area, a major realignment of Sloan Road here, that's Sloan to the east and Holly Mount to the west, could be achieved as a result of development on the site. Because DelDOT's capital improvement forecast for Route 24 for the foreseeable forever future does not allocate money to alleviate this particular area of concern, the opportunity to accomplish this improvement was attractive to DelDOT. By abandoning the existing road locations, here and here, and realigning Sloan and Holly Mount at a 90 degree to Route 24, the intersection would become standard and it would be controlled by a traffic light. Would be immediate improvements could be made to a very dangerous road condition existing on Route 24, as data collected by DelDOT shows. From January 2002 through the end of 2006, there were 18 accidents on site with two fatalities attributable to the Sloan 24 Holly Mount configuration. Our traffic consultant has indicated through statistics that 7 times higher than average for Delaware Road, the fatalities. Additionally, we not only surveyed the realignment, but were added a 60-foot right-of-way to be dedicated for future improvements. And these improvements were finalized by DelDOT in a McCormick-Taylor letter dated April 26, 2006. As Jim said, we had rare, threatened, and endangered species habitat study done on the entire tract. As it relates to this particular parcel, there are no rare or threatened species found. Jim has said that the water will come through tidewater by an extension of a main that exists on Angola Road up in this area. And sewer would be handled through an on-site wastewater treatment facility, which would be owned and operated by Tidewater Utilities. To determine the suitability of the soils and the feasibility of a community system that could operate effectively on the property, Eastern Shore Soil Services was hired to provide the necessary analysis. Based on the general determination that the soils were suitable, they then located the best soil areas for the primary and spare treatment application as being proposed by RIB, Rapid Infiltration Basin. This information was then added to the base sheet, and what it shows are two areas, 2.5 acre plant location here, and another 2.5 acre site, which we propose as the spare in this location. That is the old Sloan Road. This is the proposed realignment of Sloan to now Holly Mount, coming out in a 90 degrees to one another. What I want to do is go to the compilation board. And what we did is we compiled all this data on the from the base sheets and established the development envelopes where homes, recreation, and open space could be planned. As I said, we planned this property as one community, and while the focus is on the eastern parcel, I do want to discuss how we intend to handle the community's most significant asset, which is Burton Pine, in which we intend to share as an amenity, not only for people here, but for the people that have used the pond over a number of years. It is part of the community's overall amenity plan, but its acreage wasn't incorporated in any density calculations, nor was it counted as any open space or any zoning request. And we recognized from the start that when we became contract purchasers, we became stewards of the pond. And we were determined from the start that we would establish the means and methods to do four things. One, continue its use as a source for local areas, recreation, and fishing. That's not that community that we're proposing, but for the people that use it today, not only the existing owners, but people that have pulled off the road and would fish and recreate across that field. We would ensure the continued viability of its ecosystem. We would move to improve the current conditions that exist in the pond that we purchased. And finally, we wanted to minimize the impacts our proposed development would have on the pond. And to accomplish this, we hired EnviroTech to initiate the analysis of the water body and the areas surrounding the water body, the buffers, the wetland buffers, the riparian buffers between our farmland and the water. After extensive field research, months of that, and communication with the state DENREC representative, and numerous discussions with property owners in and around that pond, a three-tiered management program for Burton's pond was developed. This management program has three stages. It has an application has immediate, intermediate, and long-term. And during the immediate phase, we established 6 monitoring stations through this area, out the outfall, both ends where water comes in, and several others. And from those test sites, we began to collect data and water samples so we could establish a baseline on the existing conditions of the pond, and at the same time, we established a periodic monitoring program that we do after event rains and we'll do on a cyclical basis as we go through this process. Based on the results of the test samples that were taken, we then moved into the immediate intermediate stage, which would occur that is, if we're fortunate enough to have approval, where we would begin to clear the invasive species from existing channels, not the whole pond, but the existing channels in the pond. And they exist here and here. And we would clear paths through that. And then clearing those paths, we would take and begin to clear the invasive species. And this work would free portions of the pond, because in the summer, as you've driven by, it's full of, spatterdock, water lilies, stuff that you can't bow through. But it would also enhance water movement, because right now, because the channels are blocked with this growth, silt that is running off this property, from off-site into here, are beginning to create this bog and actually building up land as it moves down, because this channel isn't cleared, and silt that's running from areas off here, both farm and development, have begun to clog, and you can see that taking place there. Clearing the channel will allow this silt to be moved and dispersed. This would be an ongoing process through the development, as well as stormwater management and areas of taking this riparian buffer and clearing the invasive species out, so it becomes an enticing habitat, a natural habitat. The last stage of the program would transition into a community responsibility, and the homeowners association would manage the program after development has been completed. After it's completed, at this stage, the homeowners association would be active, funded, and educated to its responsibilities regarding the program. And finally, I want to go back in, iterate, this pond will be continued to be open to the local area, and we will provide and promote parking and access points so the outside community can recreate and fish on the pond with minimal environmental impacts. This area here is not only a park that will be open to the general public, but we have parking that people can then park instead of how they do is drive in here. And the outside people can continue to boat and fish and recreate on the pond. Going back to the compilation board, the total compilation board, going back to this property, we determined based on the data we had collected regarding the site, and it's shown on this constraints or development base sheet, that the use of the MRRPC would allow us to achieve not only our original development goals, such as minimizing impacts on forested area and minimizing impacts on archaeological points of interest, areas of interest, but the clustering that's inherent in the RPC application would create significant amounts of open space and large buffering areas. Additionally, the MRRPC, and this is our opinion, would provide an opportunity for alternative housing types in addition to the single-family lot home offering on the western track, which would address a segment of the market that does not want a lot of home and wants little or no outside maintenance. We reviewed the success of the multifamily units located at Baywood, about 9/10 or a mile south of the site, and it was apparent that a well-planned, architecturally attractive alternative to the single-family home included in Burton Pond community would meet an existing need. And this is most importantly, we could provide for much-needed housing absent from the current inventory in the county, a home that is affordable to local residents in an area that has become out of reach to a large segment of our population. We wanted an opportunity to provide affordable housing to moderate-income households on this parcel by committing 20 of the 102 units to the county's MPHU unit program. Finally, and just as critical in the land planning, can we flip it over now, please? Was to minimize the clearing of the upland woods. By applying the design flexibility of the RPC application, the ability to cluster, no, the homes, I'm sorry. You can't see it, but by the ability of clustering, these homes in a tight but cohesive land plan
allowed for the significant features, which is this 12 acres of woods, to remain in place and preserved from development. The same design flexibility of clustering also allowed for the creation of significant setbacks from both Route 24 and Sloan Road. This is the 12-acre woods that remain intact. The setbacks that we propose in this area, and this is an example, this is over 230 feet off of 24. This area is 180 feet, and it's down to about 165 to 170 feet. And what we've done, jumping ahead a little bit, but just to clue you in on Sloan Road, this is Sloan Road in line. This is the actual location of the first multifamily unit, which is about 210 feet, not off the right-of-way, but the roadway. And in this area is planted a 30-foot landscape berm. The intention of the berm and the setback would be to enhance the existing growth in this area, sort of pull it out of the existing woods, plant it along this as in the buffer, and provide an attractive visual screen and the softening of an introduction of a new development. This one below is a single family cross section under the by right development subdivision application. We've got about 110 feet from the first house to the same car location versus the 210.
How much in the bottom? How many feet?
I'm sorry, at the bottom is 110, and this would be, we'll show you a plan that shows a single family development. That's our first single family home, and this would be at 210 feet, the first multifamily home off Sloan Road. This jumps up to about 300 and some feet when you're on 24. The same design flexibility allowed us to avoid the impacting the archaeological sites of interest. One area that I didn't point out, which we learned about, is this area here, half wooded, half in and out, was actually all the way through the subdivision, and that's the old road, Angola Road, that went to the mill that was located here. And this was the old road, Angola Road, basically, before this existed. This area was avoided. These areas have been avoided through this development. In this plan, even it's included in the density calculations, but this piece of property, this 5.75 acres of land, included in this density calculation and application, is preserved from any development and begins to act as the buffer for the property that contains both the upland woods, a portion, and this ripe area of prehistoric archaeological significance. That area will not be developed under this application. The 42 acres are included in the RPC application. Again, we propose 102 units on the site in the form of attractive 6- and 8-unit buildings known and trademarked, and I didn't realize this until recently, that they're trademarked as the big house. And again, as Jim says, it has successful application at Painter's Mill, which is a predominant single-family plan community near Milton. That one, please. The architectural concept was to design a multifamily building that appeared like a large single-family home or a big house. By limiting the number of units per building, as well as attention to exterior architectural features, allowed the original designer to take the four sides of the elevation and make it appear like a large single-family house or one big house. And this is these are pictures that exist up at these are the homes built at Painter's Mill, and these are again renderings of that project. Multifamily, but wrapped in terms of scale and height.
and profile like a large single-family home. In fact, in this next scale rendering, just to give you an idea of why we chose then this product, is that the character and scale of the big house is much the same as this 3,200 square foot, four bedroom, three and a half bath, with garage, single family home that's being built in Redden Woods. And we scaled it off of 3 foot door. So while not 100%, that's where the big house term comes from. That's an existing single family scale to this. Same height, roof lines, and.
Did I hear you right? Is that trademarked?
The big house is trademarked. Sure. And it was introduced because of this in areas where there was a transition between high density multifamily and all. Now, it's done by having 6 units to 8 units of building. They're flats, condominium flats, but architecturally they wanted to appear, as you turn the buildings, as if it was a large single family home. And it's three dimensional at Painter's Mill. With the clustering, RPC clustering,
as Jim has said, but I want to run through it. The area that we're developing here, we end up with about over 70% of
open space. But key in that open space is the fact that the 12 acres of woods remain. And it's the space is either undeveloped, reforested, and it contains recreational amenities and the landscape buffer. Finally, in choosing the application, this application, we were able to, and I use the word afford for lack of another word, but afford the opportunity to participate in the county's MPHU unit program by committing 20 of the units to the moderate income housing. We intend to dispense the units throughout the 15 buildings, and the moderate income owners will have the same access to and enjoyment of the pool, bathhouse, and tennis courts located centrally on this property
here and shown blown up there,
but also the access to all Burton community amenities and activities, as all other owners will enjoy. As you've heard, we intend the property to be developed as one community, and it's been planned as such. I'll try to briefly tell you our overall development goals, taking into consideration the constraints and site features that were researched, located, and mapped on a development base sheet. And I've reviewed the process that we took over a number of months to explain our intentions and the basis for the land plan, our rationale for selecting the zoning category. I know time is always of the essence, and I understand there's things, but what I really want to do is wrap up my presentation with my thoughts regarding the proposal that came as a result of the hearing at Planning and Zoning and the opposition to what we proposed. And I want to articulate these thoughts not as a challenge, but I'd like you to take them into consideration as you mull this decision, because it's not an easy one, but in our opinion, it's the right one. I want you to remember that the proposed community received the State Planning Office Plus approval. That is both for the AR cluster and the MRRPC. And in their letter dated 9/15/05, they stated we didn't have an objection to the portion of the project that we're discussing tonight within the environmentally sensitive development district. And in their subsequent letter, they had no objection to the AR cluster, and their comments acknowledged the environmentally sensitive design of our community. No matter how it goes, this approval shouldn't be dismissed, nor should be shortchanged in any way. But I know that a State Planning Plus approval isn't a free lunch ticket, but it is an approval that has weight and merit, and it is approval that comes after this proposal was washed through a review and comment process that included state, county, and federal agencies encompassing all kinds of disciplines. Our plus review contained comments from over 17 various agencies and which covered numerous aspects and anticipated impacts this development would have. That's the first. The second, I want to refocus again on the use of the RPC and its ability to cluster allowed us to preserve 12 acres of upland woods. Alternative land uses would not have preserved these woods to the extent that this land plan has done. And what we've done is try to put together the 7,500 square foot lot program would do. And I apologize for the scale, but basically, we again didn't max because this is 85 lots. We didn't max out because we again avoided the cemetery, the archaeological sites here, and we provided amenity. But basically, that unit here is that cut section that I had shown you before, the setback distance.
Can we take?
Additionally, we preserved again, not only the woods, but we preserved this area as a buffer. That's why the state gave us the historic agency arm of the state gave us kudos for this, because this area prevents any intrusion and harm to what is a significant site. This parcel, too, is a part of a total community plan that will bring $1.9 million of road realignment to Sloan, Route 24, and Holly Mount. This improvement is not included, again, in any of the capital improvement forecasts. This project delivers the improvements at an estimated cost of $1.9 or about $5,700 a unit, and delivers it at the inception of the project because the realignment sets the boundaries for all work that follows. And that's work that we do, and it's not money we hand to DelDOT to park somewhere for perpetuity. Planning and zoning, we heard from people along Sloan Road in opposition to the project. However, I ask you to please take into consideration that these improvements and their benefit also accrue to all the people who travel Route 24. These people are the ones who find this particular confluence of Sloan, because it's this way, coming in on an angle, they're not lined up, with 24 and Holly Mount the same way, so dangerous. Without this project, it's my opinion that these improvements would not take place. There was a reference earlier to a project that had been approved very recently from a septic field lot on a parcel adjacent to us, and the thing was reduced from 23 to 12. No matter what it was reduced to, none of that project contributed to an improvement of this existing condition. This is kind of near and dear to me, is this plan's conditions its approval on submitting the project to the MPHU program and provides for 20 units for moderate income Sussex Countyans. Reading the ordinance establishing this program, the council stated it believes that a housing shortage exists within the county for residents of moderate income. The council believed in that same thing, that the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the county would be better served by providing these housing units for moderate-income citizens. And you also found, the council found, that these units could be located in qualifying land. And you all know the qualifying land, but one of the qualifiers where you could put MPHU units in environmentally sensitive developing areas and areas that are zoned for residential use. And it had to be served by public water and sewer, and is in one location. The county placed such high priority on producing these units, as I read it, that it allowed for density incentives, expedited reviews, and fee waivers. All these act as triggers to a developer and act as incentives to begin creating homes for moderate-income households. The county also said, offer more diverse range of housing in areas where demand for housing and the workers to support associated residents is strong. A number of people in opposition to this application spoke at length about the inclusion of the MPHU units in this plan. Several of the boldest statements in opposition to the units including in this were, These people would be socked with condo fees that would make it difficult to live there. The dream of ownership would be shattered, those are my words, by this cost, but the words were, paraphrasing it, they'd have to move out in a year because of the fees. In our review of the ordinance under Section 72-9, maximum sale price of new MPHU units, it appears in A3 that the county anticipated such a cost when they established the formula that calculates the price that we can sell these units to these people. And they took into account such cost as routine maintenance and provided a financial cushion for eligible buyers. Hearing this stated, and it was stated several times, but not as emotional as I'm placing it, but it was stated that several opponents of planning and zoning, I couldn't help but suspect the motives weren't trying to save these people from moderate price housing and the dream of ownership. Felt to me like it should be somewhere else down the road or up the road. Another Sloan resident, while wholeheartedly supporting the concept, felt that this particular offering was better suited to an urban setting, an urban area, not on Sloan and Route 24. In other words, better suited down the road. Well, the MPHU unit program was written for Sussex County to address the county's needs. The city of Wilmington didn't write it, Dover didn't write it, and townships didn't write it. Sussex County did, and there's no real urban areas in the county. This was recognized when the ordinance was written and the qualifications to be accepted into the program allowed MPHU units to be placed in environmentally sensitive developing districts. They're not urban. Sussex County needs moderate price housing for moderate income households. The county isn't urban, but it certainly has a need. And I found this particular opposition and that argument justifying it over the top. They were telling planning and zoning to find somewhere else for housing for people who live and work and serve in the county. If this were to be approved, they objected to a totality, but they spoke. And what I guess, and I apologize, it concerned me the most, that not only objecting to the multifamily, the character issue, the this and that issue, they went after the MPHU program. Well, these people live and work in the county. They provide cable and phone services, their life safety, they're the police, they're the teachers, they fill prescriptions, and they deliver mail. So I believe that this is an opportunity to provide necessary housing. And finally, I want to wrap up a quick review of the financial impacts this project could have in the county over a six-year build-out, starting in 2010-11, because that would be, if we were fortunate to get approved, that would be the length of time it would take to go through the engineering and permit processes. One is the 1.9 million road improvements, the estimated $14 million in construction over build-out. That's for this parcel. In total, the project would yield approximately $67 million in construction costs. An estimated $230,000 in building permits of build-out from this section, nearly $450,000 overall, $677,000 estimated real estate to the county, $2.4 million in total, an estimated $800,000 in transfer fees over build-out, the total would be $3.8 million. The last thing, and this is, again, this is my opportunity to talk to you directly. You know, I've been before you a number of times, and I've recently heard things that have bothered me. I heard at the planning and zoning opponents saying that this was another example of a greedy developer trying to maximize profits at the expense of, and at that point, I don't remember what it was the expense of because I shut it out. I've worked as a builder developer in this county for decades, and with RDM, my own company, for just under 15 years. I've been before the council a number of times, proposing to develop and build communities, both small and large. And I never represented to this council that I was anything but a businessman whose business was building and development. And inherent in the successful building is some profit. RDM, my partners OAA, and Horsey are successful business people. However, I've never proposed a development creating a community, and I've never been in front of you, that was greed-driven. In fact, I've learned from time, innovative, responsible development, which is well-planned and considerate, really makes the return at the end of the day. I firmly believe that the projects that I've done in the county, Savannah's Landing, Forest Reach, Hunter's Run, Arrington Woods, and the Villages of Five Points, were well-conceived, executed as I represented to the council that they would be, and when finished, represented some of the better communities developed in the area. And we've always strived through planning and the tools that are available to us from the county to leave a project and its environment, both that project and the surrounding environment, better than its zoning category initially envisioned. And I don't want to use the word, but over-the-top profit or greed never played a role in any development concepts for these projects, and it doesn't now. I want to say, regardless of the final decision, I wanted the opportunity to explain to you why we think that what we have planned on this property and designed at Burton's Pond, using the tools that the county has given us, is a better than its current zoning category could create. And I want to thank you for the opportunity. I do want to say one thing, because I know it's when Jim held up the book of Randall Warren likes open space, but likes single-family homes. What we did is follow the pattern of establishing background stage of when you begin to identify potential spaces. And thank you again. I appreciate it.
Gentlemen, in conclusion, as I said, only Mike and I were going to speak. If you do have any questions, as I said, we have a number of people here that will answer your questions. That is the basis for our MRRPC request, and I think you can tell that we firmly believe that the benefits to be gained from this proposed development far outweigh any real or perceived detriment. We created this plan based on the guidelines and the goals that were urged by the state and the county. We designed it to protect the environment and to protect the cultural features of the site. We proposed a use that I believe is totally supported by the existing Sussex County Land Use Plan and fully supported by the Delaware Office of State Planning Coordination. Our proposal is not unique. It's a multi-family development on this portion of the property. Multifamily use has already been found to be appropriate in this area and appropriate in the growth zone, and has already been permitted on the east side of Route 24 at Baywoods. And in fact, in Baywoods, multifamily is being built in connection with single family. And I can assure you, Mr. Tunnel wouldn't be doing that if it was depreciating the value of his single family units. It's just plain good development. It provides the alternatives, and in this case, will also provide some affordable housing options under the MPHU. I want to submit to you the when I was making my presentation, I referred to some documents. I have copies of the documents that I referred to, one of which is the ordinance approving the GRRPC for the Baywood property. And also I have, for your consideration, some proposed findings of facts and proposed conditions for your consideration. And gentlemen, with that will conclude our presentation, subject to any questions you might have.
Any questions by members of council?
Thank you. No.
They wore me down. I'm exhausted.
I thought you were asleep. You've been so quiet down there.
Is there anyone else here who wishes
to... He's talking more in Fuquay.
Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak in favor of this application? Is there anyone here who wishes to speak in opposition? And if you will, please remember when you come to the podium, just state your name and tell council where you live.
My name is Bob McGurl. I live at 33 Pinewater Drive in Pinewater Farm. Mr. Lank earlier alluded to the many letters petitions and speakers that were present or forwarded paper for the 22nd of February meeting at the Planning and Zoning Commission. He indicated that there was only one person in favor of this development at that time. I think that one person, the woman who was in favor of it, was in favor of the cluster development and the cleaning up of Burton's Pond. I do not believe her favoritism had to do with the rezoning here. Is that right, Mr. Lank, as you recall?
Well, let's see. Tried to quote what she said.
This is a Scooter Libby moment. He remembers.
No, I wrote down what she said. So.
Scooter Lank.
Said she found the developer to be very professional, that most developers maximize impact, that developers plan on improving the environmental features of the project, that adjacent landowners in the past have tried to improve the pond with no success and with little to no cooperation from the owners, that the developers intents are welcome to those who live on the pond, and that the proposal will have a positive impact on to the site and the area. I don't think she really separated it, too. She looked at the whole picture.
Okay. Yeah. Well, whether it's 100% against this or 99% against this, I guess the position is clear that the local residents do not want this rezoning. The residents of this area feel that the environmentally sensitive overlay zone should be protected from significant additional human waste so that the groundwater quality can be improved and the inland bays will again support marine life that many of us have come here to enjoy. Rezoning for multiple family units with on-site waste disposal system is environmentally wrong and removes the zoning protection that the current residents of this area want to retain. In the 2003 Comprehensive Land Use Plan, the first sentence under the heading Purpose states, and I'll quote, "The purpose of designing the environmentally sensitive developing area is to recognize that the inland bays of Sussex County are a major resource of the county and must be protected from insensitive development. Approval of multifamily units in this area would show insensitivity to the environment and the area residents. And I hope the 2007 comp plan will provide cleaner restrictions for this type of high-density development. The 2003 comp plan also states that multifamily housing units are required to accommodate the needs of low-income and elderly residents, but these developments should be located in town centers where public infrastructure and services are available. This area is certainly not a town center." Another statement in the plan on page 11 says, and I will quote, "The intent of the plan is to encourage higher residential densities in town centers, with the densities reducing as development moves further away from the town centers." I guess these statements and the statements of Mr. Fuqua indicated some ambiguity in the comp plan of 2003. We'd hope to the new 2007 plan would clear up some of those ambiguities, so that
I guess the question begs, what is your definition of high density? We have 12 units per acre available, which some would consider high density as opposed to this.
The big house that was described earlier as looking at like a house, to me, is a high density. The average number of people living in that house is going to be 30. The average number of automobiles parked outside that house is going to be 24. That's high density, as far as I'm concerned.
Putting in at like 2.5 units per acre in totality, isn't it better to concentrate the high density on a little bit of acreage and preserve the rest?
Apparently, the people that are residing in this area do not feel that way from their comments, their petitions, and their letters.
Okay.
The developer's presentation uses Baywood Development, which is about a mile away, as a precedent for multifamily townhouses in this area, neglecting the present and developing standard housing developments that are the norm in this area. Baywood 1, Baywood 2, and Bridalwood are probably the biggest mistakes the council has made in the past few years. I see these developments as the pot nets of the future, where retirees on fixed income have had their life savings depleted to pay escalating land rent. Middle-income townhouse owners will have the same financial problem trying to pay for maintenance of original infrastructure and fees for new infrastructure that were not present when the development was started. The maintenance of Burton's Pond would be one of those significant cost burdens for those people. I spoke earlier that petitions were presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission on February 22nd. These petitions, signed by 120 residents of Pinewater Farm, object to the subject rezoning property east of Route 24 on both sides of Sloan Road. This property is in the environmentally sensitive overlay zone, which is an area to be protected from insensitive development. Since the proposed rezoning is out of context with the 2003 Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan, we request this application be rejected, or at least tabled until the 2007 plan is issued to further define the use of the environmentally sensitive overlay zone. That's all I would like to say. If there's any questions, I would be happy to address them.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Tyler.
For the record, my name is Michael Tyler. I'm president of Citizens Coalition, and I was asked by the people at Pinewater to give some testimony. The testimony given by Mr. Fuqua and Mike Lynn, sometimes if it sounds too good to be true, it may not be true. Mr. Fuqua has a habit of misreading or not reading all the material that's in the comp plan. But if you look at guidelines for infrastructure, it says extension of central waste. This is under the environmentally sensitive area. Extension of central wastewater systems in this area to serve failing on-site systems and new development will protect the inland bays from excessive amount of nutrients. It goes on to say the South Coastal Regional Wastewater Treatment Facility and the Inland Bays Regional Wastewater Treatment Facility currently provide wastewater treatment for a portion of this area. Seven sewer districts, West Rehoboth and so on. They're not talking about an on-site. They're talking about sewer districts. Plans are underway to serve Cedar Neck and Oak Orchard and other smaller areas where central service is not available. New developments using on-site systems should have a minimum lot size of 0.5 acre where permitted by DENREC. It just says that we really should be looking to have the inland bays protected by our wastewater systems, not by on-site systems, which typically have a record of failing. I, too, have read Randall Arendt. You might say I'm a disciple of Randall Arendt. And what Randall Arendt will say about this particular development, I'll quote it. Were this a conservation or open space design, this application would have the appearance of a golf course community without a golf course. Now, I'm talking about the one across the road only because they have mixed up and muddled this whole discussion tonight with what you saw on the other side of the road. Again, the description straight from Mr. Arendt. The fact is that this development appears to be more what closely Randall Arendt would call a conventionally designed subdivision. I suppose the cluster concept aim is to preserve open space, but listen to what Mr. Arendt says. In its purest form, the term open space refers to residential developments, whereas in golf course communities, half or more of the buildable land is designated as undivided permanent open space. Undivided permanent open space, not strips here, not strips there. This result is typically achieved in a density-neutral manner by designing residential neighborhoods more compactly with smaller lots for narrower single-family homes, as found in the traditional villages and small towns. I've written two letters, one because I was misled. I thought this was going to discuss the subdivision, and then I realized it was going to be the change of zone. I'll read my change of zone letter, but I'll also submit this one just for your information. I want to talk about the moderately priced housing unit. When our team and our group, as you know, I'm one of the authors and instigators of this whole program. When our group discussed it, we talked about single family homes, not condominiums, not apartments, because single family homes are the basis, the stepping stone for a person to buy a home and move on. They can even improve that home, and those improvements they'll get their money back from improving that home. But these are condominiums. These do have fees and additional monies that perhaps this person who is maybe only in the 80% category may not be able to afford. So I would say that this is ill-founded to say it's good to have moderately priced housing in condominiums. I'd rather see it across the way in the single-family homes. It would make more sense, and I would prefer that, and I would support that. But I think to have it in the condominiums is sort of a one step forward and two step back. And I don't believe that was the intent of our committee when we sat down and talked about who would buy what and what kind of homes would they live in. We talked about integrating these homes within a community. If you remember, we talked about that. We said we didn't want them to be an enclave. We wanted them to be interspersed throughout the community, to be part of the community. And that's where the diversity would come in. Not in a group, not in a group of condominiums, or not where they're all in one building, or not on one floor. I just don't think that that's an appropriate use of our moderately priced housing unit ordinance. And I think that you need to consider that.
That seems to be all we're getting, is the condominium townhouse is the affordable element.
Well, that's fine. Make them affordable, but don't make them part of the moderately priced housing unit, because we're talking about putting these into inventory, and this inventory, maybe condos will lose value, but single-family homes generally don't lose value. And I feel that the moderately priced housing ordinance, as we set it up and as we pursued it, we were always thinking single-family housing.
That element of this proposal is more of a PR element. They have not taken advantage of the expedited application process or the additional density.
Right. Okay. So if they can do that on their own, and it wouldn't then be in the inventory, and they're offering that as a PR, then I don't have a